Our service this morning will be concluded by the harp benediction. If you must go before our service is closed, I hope that you'll go immediately, that we may not be interrupted in this closing part of this important session of our meeting. A few weeks ago, word came to us that our speaker of the morning, the president of the Baptist World Alliance, Dr. John Soren of Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, was entering the hospital and would not be able to come to the States to meet his engagements. Dr. Nordenhaug reached me by telephone, and when he told me, I felt that I just couldn't stand it. I didn't know what we would do. Would you look there at the title of the solo, which is to be sung, God is Our Refuge? Miss Hunt and I discussed it for a few moments, and then immediately we placed a telephone call to Hamilton, Canada, to talk to the chairman of the Women's Department of the Baptist World Alliance, Ms. Edgar Bates. We told her that we knew this was the busiest week of all the year, commencement week at McMaster's, where she is Dean of Women. We told her that we knew that it would be impossible for her to come, but that we were praying that she would make it possible and that God would bring her here today to speak to us. She arrived this morning by plane at 9:27. It is a good many miles to the airport, but we have not worried about it. She has not worried, nor have we, for we knew that God would bring her here this morning, and so he has. Mrs. Edgar Bates, known and loved around the world as a leader in the Baptist World Alliance, born of missionary parents in India, spending most of her life in Canada with her husband, her children, and then for the last few years as Dean of Women at McMaster University. How grateful we are to you, Ms. Bates, that you stepped out of a few hours away from your work to come here to speak to us in this annual meeting. Women's Missionary Union of the Southern Baptist Convention shall ever be grateful to you. And as we welcome you to this platform this morning, we pledge to you our full support of the work of the Women's Department of the Baptist World Alliance, which you represent. And we ask you to take our love and greetings to our missionaries and friends and co-workers in South America when you go there this summer. Before Ms. Bates speaks, Ms. Audrey Nosselman will sing, God is Our Refuge. And our service will be concluded with a harp meditation. And after that, we shall be adjourned until 1:30 this afternoon.
Breaketh the bow and cutteth the spirit's soul. present help in time of trouble. Therefore will not we fear, though the earth be removed, and though the mountains be carried into the midst of the sea, though the waters thereof roar and be troubled.
Salam Ma from my native India. And greetings from Canada. Madam Chairman and dear friends, I am as regretful and disappointed as you that you are not to look into the face of Dr. Soren this morning. Across the years in the work of the Alliance, we have come to know and love and hold him in deep respect. And I cannot but think of his deep disappointment in not being able to be with you. But it's all too true that what is one person's disappointment is another one's delight. I'm just as surprised as you are to find myself here this morning. This is one of the times when the marvels of the jet age becomes extremely personal. To be able to be with my beloved graduating students yesterday afternoon and evening, and then to share with you in the warmth and fellowship of a Women's Missionary Union convention is something I never dreamed of happening to me. And I am deeply indebted to your president, a friend of long standing, to Miss Hunt, who has been a roommate of mine on occasion, for allowing me to come here and be with you this morning. Yes, sir, these are tremendous days in which to be alive. Days of the greatest possibility. Threatening days, of course. Days of division and misunderstanding. Days both here and the world over that call for new light and new leading. And days when a warm, friendly hand stretched out to others may work wonders of reconciliation, I think we ask ourselves, what can one woman do for the cause of Christ in such times? What can one church do? What can we all do working together, particularly as members of the Women's Department of the Baptist World Alliance? As I pondered these questions, I realized that the Apostle Paul lived in just such difficult days. He asked himself the same questions, and in 1 Corinthians 16th chapter, verses 8 and 9, he answered them. I shall stay here at Ephesus until the feast of Pentecost, for there is a great opportunity of doing useful work, and many people are against me. Opposition and opportunity, two sides of the same situation. I invite you to look at them with me this morning. Actually, Paul discovered his opportunity at Ephesus of doing useful work through the pressure of opposition to his faith. Many enemies were against him. The silversmiths and their friends were, because his preaching interfered with their business. As makers of the image of the goddess, they were able to stir up all of his followers simply by saying religion was being attacked. And it was that opposition that showed Paul that his faith and the preaching of it was drawing notice and making an impression. There was something in it sufficiently stirring that it drew the attention of non-believers. It demanded opposition because if they let it alone, their whole accepted system of business and religion would be upset. And in that opposition, Paul saw his opportunity. If his faith and the preaching of it hadn't caused a ripple, there would have been no opportunity. But because it roused opposition, it spelled opportunity. And the apostle, seeing the situation, said, I stay here. And he remained in Ephesus for 3 years until all those in Asia had heard the word of the Lord, both Jews and Greeks. Ephesus became the most powerful center of Christianity in the later apostolic age. And here Paul shows us the pattern of stirring Christianity in difficult times. The more devoted we are to the understanding and practice of our faith, the more aware we're going to be of the opposition to Christianity in the life of our times. And the more awake we're going to be to the greatness of the opportunity in the face of that opposition to serve the Lord's cause. We'll say with Paul, I stay here. With Luther, here I stand. And the results of our doing will be worth the fight. In order to understand our problems worldwide better, let us look first at adversaries that open doors, opposition that spells opportunity. And you can't get away from the major political forces of our time. It's impossible to talk about Christianity without talking also about the governments of some countries. And chief among these, of course, is communism. In a December letter from our Bolivian Baptist field, Canadian Baptist Mission Field, one of our missionaries wrote of visiting mining towns to the south of La Paz, and 3 times in 1 week she found herself in the midst of communist-led manifestations designed to foment hatred of imperialist America and love for communist Russia. Further south, in the fertile Cochabamba Valley, where we have our largest training school for young Bolivian pastors, there's been intermittent warfare for nearly a year. Raiding and pillaging and killing have turned a former prosperous countryside into an uneasy no man's land. Hundreds have been killed through battles between bands armed with automatic weapons and even mortars. The leader of one of those is a communist, the other a former evangelical. And just before our missionary wrote, the storm had broken in Cochabamba itself. There, a communist-led gang used tear gas and stones and voices to disrupt a speech on science and faith being given by the American ambassador to the students at the Cochabamba University. One of the greatest challenges to emerge since the birth of Muhammad is communism. And make no mistake about it, Marxist communism is a religion. They would dispute that violently because they claim to be atheists, but it offers a way of salvation and it proclaims a doctrine. It's completely this worldly, salvation here and now with beyondness eliminated. But it promises deliverance from all evils. It offers life and bread and freedom and meaning in a tormented, empty, hungry, and thirsty age. It promises a new world. And it constantly ridicules what it terms non-scientific religion. One of the very finest women students I have ever had at McMaster married an equally fine young man 3 years ago. Today, they are in Prague, members of our Canadian consulate there. Jenny has seen many things that have disturbed her. And because she can send her letters through the diplomatic pouch where they are untouched, she has been able to tell me some of them. And just recently, she told of a religious poll that was held a short time ago in a school in Slovak. The students were asked to answer anonymously the question, why do you believe in God, and why do you not believe in God, or why do you not believe in God? Of the answers, 13 were non-believers, 8 were do-not-knows, and 10 were believers. Here are quotations from the article as translated by the British Embassy Press section. Of the 13 non-believers, the government wrote, they were relying on science and rejected the idea of God's existence on account of good and progressive education which they had received from their parents. Their answers contained convincing arguments and testified to the healthy ideological attitude of the Slovak youth. They're the party line. They're in. Of the 8 do-not-knows, the reason for their doubts is obviously religious education within their families, a conflict in their souls caused by their parents, who teach them something other than they learn at school or in their young pioneer and youth union organization. Young people from religious-minded families constitute the most difficult problem. The 8 pupils full of doubt signal the importance of atheist education, which should be carried out consistently and systematically. Some of these religious families are our own Baptist folk, and I have wondered what would be the fate of the parents if they could be identified through this religious poll. Of the 10 believers, among the Czechoslovak young generation, who within several years will assume the management of the country, one can meet with views which do not offer a guarantee that new people without obscure residues from the past will be educated. The new constitution naturally guarantees the citizens' freedom of religious thought. However, lack of guidance in this respect could bring about grave losses. Nobody in this country is fighting against God. It would be ridiculous to fight against something which does not exist. A struggle is, however, going on against obscurity in the mind of the young generation in particular. I have read you these to give you some insight into what our Baptist folk in communist-controlled countries must face as they try to teach their sons and daughters the truths of the gospel. And half of the world is totalitarian. Totalitarians must reject the existence of God because if there is a God, their power is not total. Another powerful obstacle is nationalism. We of the West sowed the wind, and now we're reaping the whirlwind. In 1956, I visited many countries of Africa with your Mrs. George R. Martin, former president of the Women's Missionary Union and the immediate past chairman of the Women's Department of the Baptist World Alliance. We were there to help organize the Baptist Women's Union of Africa. And I, for one, certainly did not realize the seething forces just underneath the seemingly peaceful surfaces of so many of those countries. How many of us could have guessed that the Congo would explode in such violent revolt? 2 years ago, our Canadian Baptist Foreign Mission Secretary visited Angola, where we have a very considerable mission work in the north, a number of young missionary families. When he returned, he told us hopefully that he would believe it be 25 to 30 years before trouble developed in that Portuguese colony. We were overly optimistic. With the chaotic Congo to the north, the restless people of Rhodesia to the east, and the troubled peoples of South and West Africa below us, we couldn't help being infiltrated. Today, we are faced with the possibility indeed almost the probability, of having to withdraw our missionary forces from Angola. Already our women missionaries, wives of missionaries and children, are being refused return visas after furlough. Those who are in the country are working on, we do not know for how long. Men missionaries are being given visas, but how long they will be allowed to remain, we do not know. I ask you most earnestly to pray with us for our Canadian Baptist mission work in Angola. These new nations with their new nationalism are so often antagonistic to the West, and they're equally frequently dominated by one religion, so that included in their antagonism is a struggle with Western religion. And in this fierce situation, Christianity must oppose the very governments of nations, of some smaller and some greater nations. Coming closer home, there's race prejudice, which we in Canada and you here find in our countries. Only a short time ago, a national magazine in my country carried an article that was a scathing indictment on what it means to be a Negro in Canada today. Our immigration policy is a matter of concern to many of us, with its exclusion of so many needy groups. We've never made our relations with the Jews what they ought to be. Ah, but there's something that touches us even more closely than that. That's the worldliness within our very churches. Too often, a worldly standard of success dominates a church. To be the largest this or the largest that is the standard of success. Numbers count. Possessions count. To have a balance in the treasury. To be the richest this or the richest that. To have put out the most money in building or equipment counts. Status counts. To have the right people in a group, to exclude the wrong people. To appeal to the upper classes, to be sufficiently exclusive to be in, is a coveted situation. And the acceptance by the church of these standards has blurred its vision. Not the standard of Jesus when he said, "I was hungry and you gave me food." But how many new members have come into the local congregation? How nice are they? These are the things that count within the cozy walls of our churches. And those walls are so thick that we cannot hear the shouts of battle, the groans of the repressed, the cries for help that spell Christian opportunity in Christ's world outside. Too often we forget that the words, "Whosoever shall lose his life for my sake shall find it," apply to the church also as an organization. But now I'm talking to myself as well as to you. They're the adversaries within ourselves, the opposition right in your own personality. Our own indifferences, our own tendency to find fault, not to appreciate the efforts of others, our own worldliness, our seeking after possession and pleasure, our own unwillingness to sacrifice and work hard for the cause of Christ and his church. You know what are your adversaries. I know what are mine. But let's not blind ourselves to the fact that they are opposing the cause of Christ in the world today. Now we've looked for a little while at the negative side, the opposition rising out of opportunity that spells opportunity. Let's look at the positive, the opportunities. Paul, we remember, decided to stay and work on the job at Ephesus because in the nature of the opportunity of the opposition, he saw the opportunity to do useful work. Let's look at opportunities arising out of opposition. And first, of course, communism and nationalism and other political forces challenge us as Christians. Just a month ago, I attended a meeting of the National Baptist Convention of Mexico, held in Torreon, a growing city in the heart of the cotton-growing area some hundreds of miles northeast of Mexico City. And there, in humility, I learned a great lesson in making opportunity out of opposition. Now, perhaps some of you here know about these things in Mexico. I didn't, and I'm just like any woman When I see something new, I want to come home and tell everybody else about it. So I hope you will share my understanding of the situation and my enthusiasm. Because of rampant nationalism, Mexico will not allow our people to own religious property. If a church building is desired, the government must be appealed to. Once permission is granted and the church is up, the group sponsoring it pays taxes, although it can't own either the property or the building. Furthermore, if the government at any time desires that building for any purpose, it may expropriate it without explanation. The missionaries tell me that fortunately this has been very rare in recent years, but it's still a real danger. Religious meetings must always be held in a church building, and that obtains for religious education, which explains why all the training being done by the Torreon Bible Seminary is carried on the third floor of the church building. Just imagine the inconvenience to your missionaries and ours, because I think any Christian missionary anywhere in the world belongs to any Christian through sympathy and prayer and understanding. Just imagine your missionaries climbing two steep flights of stairs 3 and 4 times a day in steaming heat. None but Mexicans can preach in Mexico's pulpits, but the missionaries assure me that this is a good thing. There's no bar on training native pastors, and the urgency of the situation demands training as many as quickly as possible. And each of Mexico's 250 Baptist churches have missions, many missions. The First Baptist Church of Torreon, for example, has 12. And here's where opportunity was wrested out of opposition. Religious meetings can be held only in churches, but a family can have family worship, and friends may be invited to share. So missions meet in the homes of believers. Here again, care's got to be exercised. If a vengeful neighbor reports too many meetings over too many months in a certain house, that home may be expropriated and our Baptist people summarily dispossessed. But the missionary telling me about it said, this actually is not an obstacle. It is an opportunity. The practice has developed of moving the locale of missions every 6 months or so. Can you imagine the inconvenience of moving from a neighborhood where they're just getting used to having church meetings and some training has been done? But there's also the advantage of going constantly into new areas with the Word of God, which they hadn't had before. And out of these house meetings and missions, churches sometimes develop. So far as radio is concerned, all gospel work must be done through commercials. This was new to me. An announcer who is a trained radio professional man must be in charge of your program. Records of hymns rather than live singing are preferred because the announcer can talk about them as commercials, you see. If he's friendly, he can tell them that such and such a record can be bought at such and such a place. Very little gospel preaching is allowed. On one 15-minute radio program, the missionary told me he was allowed 2 talks of 2 minutes each on Jesus, 4 minutes out of 15. But he added, better a short, direct appeal to the heart for Christ than too much preaching at once. I think the people remember our carefully selected Bible verses and our comments better than they would a long sermon. That man is in the heart of the most fanatically opposed area in all Mexico. Truly he can say, the Lord has been good to me and blessed the work of my hands. He has wrested opportunity out of opposition. Before I leave the subject of Mexico, I'd like to tell you a little something that may be of interest to housekeepers. I was sitting in the living room of the mission house at noon when I heard a shrill whistle, rather like a popcorn man's, followed by the sound of a truck rushing by. And simultaneously, the side door burst open and a woman rushed out carrying a garbage pail. The missionary saw my surprise and she said, smiled and said, would you like to go outside and see what's going on? We got out in time to see the maid running hard down the street after the truck. He saw her, stopped, took the pail and emptied it. And then the missionary said, you've just watched our daily collection of trash. That would be an opposition to me, I can tell you.